The Fourth One Fringe Takeover Podcast. With UK debt experts, there are over 51,000 performances at this year's Fringe, about one for every person in Scotland they've helped. Authorised and regulated by the FCA. May not be suitable for all. Fees and disadvantages may apply. Free advice at moneyhelper.org.uk.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Fourth One Fringe Takeover. I'm Mark Nelson and today I am joined by not just two of my favourite comedians but two of my favourite people in the world. Brendan Rees.
Hello.
And Kai Humphries. Hello, how are you boys?
Yeah, good man. We do a lot of festivals together, I feel.
We do. Music festivals. That's our habitat.
Yes.
You were at what? What one's the last one you did? You did Belladrome.
I'd done Belladrome, and that was one of the most badly set up spaces for comedy. Did you do it this year?
I've never done it as an act.
So it's got a field of grass where people can sit cross-legged, and then raked seating. But not enough people came for anybody to fill up the grass, so they were just all on the raked seating at the back,
like a gladiatorial sort of arena.
Yeah, so they expect you to stand on the stage with just about 20 yards of grass in between you and the. You had to close the space, but there's a big pillar there. I ended up in a bin. I climbed in a bin.
This is something you do at every festival, guy. This is out of the ordinary.
It wasn't the first festival I've ended up in a bin, and it won't be the last.
What day are we talking? Because first day of a festival,
that's just arrived.
Cushy accommodation.
Straight out my car into the bin.
That's how you get carried in by his wife.
Right, I'll elaborate. Right. The raked seating was in two sections with the sound tech in between, and there was a big pillar in the middle, so it was impossible to find a vantage point to do stand-up comedy to both. So I asked everybody on one side to shift over to the other, and I just had time to kill while they were doing it, and there was just an empty bin with a fresh bin bag in the middle, and I got that, and I just went, how funny would it look if people are walking by and it just looks like you're watching a bin day stand-up? And I climbed in and started flapping the lid of the bin and talking to them. I was just
like Oscar the Grouch.
I think my mum had an affair because none of my parents have wheels. I think my mum had an affair with an item of luggage and just tried to do stand-up from the point of view of a bin. And then it was 5 hours later, I was watching, Callum, he's class, the Scottish singer, Callum Beattie.
Callum Beattie,
right? And my wife just nudged us and went, why is Callum Beattie not in a bin? Why is he not doing his set from a bin? I was like, oh, there's levels to show business.
I love that, though. Do you know when you're on stage and your brain goes, go and do the thing.
Uh-huh.
I remember the first time I ever did, Late and Live, but when it was a bit more rowdy. Uh-huh. I was dead new.
The good old days.
Dying, absolutely dying. And then someone just went, take off your shoe. I thought, this will get them back. So I took off my shoe, and then someone else went, take off your other shoe. And I thought, I'm in here. 5 minutes later, I'm just in my pants, and everyone's like, off. It's like, my time's up. I've got to go.
Simon didn't say, man.
I miss those, because Late in Life, this is probably before all of us, that Late in Life was proper mental. Mm-hmm. And
when it started at 6 a.m.
Aye, and all the comics would go, because it was really the only late night gig. So everyone would go. The only one I've had was, years ago, Brendan Burns was hosting, and Brendan was being typical Brendan, trying to rile everyone up. And then Matt Winning went on, and Matt Winning had a whole routine about where he was reading out the Amazon reviews of bins.
Yeah, how did they do? They got a 5-star.
Amazon recommended guy. It was ripping, and Brendan just looked past when he went back on. He was like, Nelson, they fucking love bin stuff, right? So I went on, so I was like, I've got a bin bit as well. So I went on and did my bin bit. And then while I was on, he'd orchestrated that Matt Winning and another act had gone outside to find wheelie bins and put them over their heads. And then I had to judge a bin fight where the two of them would just run at each other and was the first one to fall down.
That's so funny.
And you were like, this is what it used to be like. Because
you used to have to steer it into chaos because sometimes you're like, you've got them for a bit, but they're drunk, they're feral, they're chatty, and then all of a sudden you're just going, right, you still want bits. Let's have a crowd.
You want bins.
Let's have a crowd surf race with a compere.
Aye.
And you just get the compere back on, and one of you do one side and one of you do the other, and race to the back of the room and back. And then you get off, you're like, right, that's 5 minutes done. What can we do?
And it'd be like, folklore of who's done the weirdest thing at the gig.
Absolutely.
So like the Monday after, someone would be going, "Did you see that? I don't know, Ian Cognito headbutted a child." Like, "It was so good. It was so good."
I've become folklore, didn't it? And then I did it this year, and it was just a playable gig. Like, just
it's actually one of the nicer gigs at the festival.
It's pretty enjoyable.
It's called Polite and Live. Like, everyone's just like, "Good pun."
Have you heard about the amazing bubble man at the festival?
I've seen the posters every year because where I live. He's not an amazing bubble man, but he is a bubble man that stands in the park. And he's got one of them, like, festival jester hats on.
Yeah.
And he keeps putting kids in bubbles, and I think, why?
Yeah.
What? Why? Just let them get on with the land.
Now that eyes are stinging because it's very liquid. And, because it's in the McEwen Hall now, but I really feel like...
Is it? That's like, 1,000-seater.
Man, that takes away the essence of blown bubbles if you're, like, if you're miles away from them.
I don't know if this is, like, a rumour or not, but I've got told by three different people the other night that on his second show this year in the McEwen Hall, because there's like all these soapy suds on the stage, he fell off stage onto a baby. Second show, a woman was just in the front row holding her newborn. He decked it off. I mean, everyone's absolutely fine. Like, there was no need for
it. It feels like a myth because I actually, like, when I heard the story, I just Googled Bubble Man Edinburgh and clicked on news.
That would be a news story, right? It would be, surely.
Your PR's working overtime if that hasn't hit the news that you squashed a baby. It wasn't just the bubbles that popped.
I've got a confession, actually. My first show, do you know when you do your first Edinburgh show and you're trying it, like, months before, you're like, "Oh, I could do this, could do that, maybe I'll do this." And I wanted this bit where I was going to blow some bubbles. So I was out... It sounds awful. Good job I didn't do it. And when I was out in Australia a few months before, I met a guy who was, I guess, the Australian counterpart of the amazing bubble man, and he was called the Abominable Showman. And for someone that deals with water and soap, he stunk. He was minging.
He doesn't get high on his own supply.
No.
How's it all been going so far?
Yeah, good. I think when you've, like, this is my, like, sixth time doing solo shows, and you just sort of come and you go, "Oh, it's just shows in porter cabins, different sized porter cabins, isn't
it?" You got a built-in review the other day.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. by one of your own, the Scotsman. Someone said, I don't know if we can we're allowed to say this anymore, but I got called the year.
Wow, that's a blast from the past as an insult.
Yeah. Of the year. I don't know how you qualify for that. But do you
now go on and compete in the European leagues?
I go to the European and then hopefully the world. For LA 28.
Breakdancing this year, the next Olympic
sport.
Oh, yeah. When I saw it, I was just like, I don't know. Because I think if I said that on stage, I'd be getting in trouble, wouldn't I? Mm. Yeah. Mm. But
a surprising thing for a reviewer to write.
It's all right. Yeah. She's mad.
How's you going?
Yeah, I've had two different fringes so far because I had the first fringe, like the first week where I lived here, and it was just feral. Yeah. Like, you know, just out every night and like doing like 3-4 shows a day and just like living the fringe. And then now I live in Glasgow. I'm just commuting in and out and it just feels strange. Like you're just like popping in, do your show and then get the train back with the punters.
Do you feel like you've been sent like to Switzerland? Like you're doing your Dignitas trips back here?
sent to Coventry, as they used to say. So it is strange because like I'll wake up in my own bed, walk my dog, do some chores in the house and play a bit of PlayStation, then go, "Oh, I've got to go to work."
Aye.
And it's just such a change of pace from what I had in the first week. Like, both pleasant ways of doing the fringe, really. Just quite the gear change.
I love that I'm go out every night till 4 in the morning. You're like, it's quite a pleasant way to do the fringe.
Oh, I love
chaos,
it.
Like, living off crepes.
That's me in the pocket. Like, I think that's the best version of me is when I'm on the sesh.
That's your sort of, like, your natural bin, I think, to be out at 4 in the morning.
Daytime kayak can take or leave, but nighttime
kayak. It's jarring for some people if they're used to partying with us.
I don't think I've ever seen you in the day. Like, you're like a vampire.
Just handling my business, doing my tax returns and all that.
Actually runs a very successful multinational during the day.
It's like seeing the ice cream man putting petrol in. I just like Mickey Mouse at Disneyland with his head under his arm having a sandwich. What's this other side of you?
Have you had that thing yet when you're getting the train back to Glasgow where there's people on the train that have been at your show? It's the worst possible thing that can happen.
I've never been locked in like that before. But one time after doing the Comedy Store, I booked an Uber and realised that I'd booked a Uber pool. And everybody booking the Uber would have been from the gig. That would have been hell. I cancelled immediately.
I remember once, worst trip back from a gig, years and years ago, maybe like 10 years ago, I was doing a gig in Exeter and there was me and a few other open spots and there was one who was like chronically bad, but we were just mates with him. And we all, the gig was out in the sea. So we had to get a boat to like a floating bar in the middle of the sea. And we all had a great gig apart from this one open spot who absolutely died. He should have swam back. And then all had to get the boat back with the audience. And people were going like, you were great, you were great.
Overboard, son.
Yeah.
God almighty. Who the hell thought that was a good idea?
I don't know. I've never heard of that gig since.
Yeah. I was on a train in from Glasgow once a few years back, and there was a guy that was just hacking his lungs out, just coughing in front of us, and you know when you're just like, oh God, don't make eye contact with a mad person. And then somebody got on and was starstruck by him and started chatting to him. And then when I got off the train, he was like, did you know who that guy was? And it was the Irish guy from Braveheart. Like, it's my island.
Really? Yeah. What a niche recognising that is.
He's still the makeup on.
He's never lied.
He's travelling standard class. Being humble.
One of my mate's friends... his chat up line is still, he goes up to girls and he tells them that he was played the young William Wallace in Braveheart. Like the 5-year old, like, no, that William Wallace. And girls are like, really? Yeah. It's one of the worst chat up lines I've ever heard. Do you know I was a child actor?
Were?
Yeah.
What were you in? How are you not more disturbed?
I probably am. That's why I'm here. My mum and dad love me very much, but for some reason, I still come to the fringe.
What do they do? Am I going to be retrospectively starstruck by him? Right?
Yeah, this way you find out I was Matilda.
I'm Dakota Fanning.
Yeah. I was in Man on Fire. I was in loads of bits and bobs. So like things like these, like kid shows, like Children's Ward, and like some period dramas. And then I was in Heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
As a kid, yeah.
Did you meet Greengrass?
I've got a picture with Greengrass. It still exists in my mum's house.
Does it?
Me and Claude.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just getting to the point now where you look at the photo and you're closer to his age than me.
I realised he was about 40. And I'm like,
So are you either your mum or dad in like entertainment or
no,
anything?
No, my mum works like doing Meals on Wheels and my dad works in a battery factory. But my brother liked drama. So he's 10 years older than me. And he got like a lead part in a period drama. So he's playing this lad. And then they needed someone for a flashback when he was 10 years younger.
Nice.
And his agent was like, well, they look exactly the same. Like, I could have been a lawyer. But no.
Is he an actor now?
No, he's not. He was doing pretty well. And then when he got to about 25, 26, he got his girlfriend pregnant. And she was like, that's done now. Your dream's done. Now he works for the council.
Made a solid job.
Yeah.
Good pension.
So I'll ask you about the Fringe because I'm sure people are really interested in it and stuff.
No, say it with heart.
It's such a weird thing because people are genuinely fascinated by this.
I think people have such preconceptions of what they go like, and they pay you to come, and then you do like 1,000 seats a day. You're like, absolutely
not. I pay them to come.
Yeah.
And I'm doing 1,000.
It's the biggest pay to play gig in the world.
Yeah, there's a wonderful thing that happens in Glasgow quite a lot where people. There's a lot of people who just refuse to acknowledge the Fringe is going on, right? And then when I used to work in the Scottish Power, there was a lot of folk that would go like, oh, you're going over to the Fringe? Like, how much is it to get in? And I was like, it's like they generally thought it was like a theme park where you arrived in Edinburgh and there was like these Jurassic Park
just
style doors and you paid to get in.
Turnstiles on Googie Road.
Yeah, I would go like, who's playing the Fringe tonight? I was like, there's about 5,000 people here.
My mum... first time she came to visit, dressed like it was, she had glitter on her face.
Well, like it was a music, yeah.
Could we wellies on? What are you doing?
Amazing. Like, what's the theme this year? Yeah. Summer of love.
You've got a good thing going with the trains now coming up for Newcastle.
Oh, that's been belt of that. The late trains back to Newcastle. 11:30 is the last train back to Newcastle. So I've had loads of Geordies in my show. Like, every gig's been like a home game.
That's so good.
Yeah, and they've taken to wearing toon tops to let us know that they're in, so I can see the Newcastle tops when I'm in there.
No way.
That's class,
that's good. Because I always thought about like how funny it would be to just like run a month in Blythe at like a 50-seater venue, because I reckon I could probably sell that out for the full run of Blythe and just get 100% of the money. But just just do that alongside the Fringe, but like an hour and a half away in the car.
But you'd still do the Fringe here and then go back and do your...
Just doubling up.
Yeah, doubling up. Yeah, I probably could. Just doubling up with Blythe.
Because you're both commuting.
Yeah, pretty much, aye.
Responsibilities, that's why.
Yeah. I moved house this week.
I seen.
That was such a wild decision to make such a big life change during such a big life
stupidest
event.
Stupidest idea
at the Fringe.
We've had our life.
Two things that you should thoroughly enjoy doing. Yeah. And you can't enjoy either of them because you should pair them together.
No, who thoroughly enjoys moving house?
It's who enjoys the Fringe?
Aye, yeah. Two of the worst things, guy. What's three on your list? A funeral?
Both with empty rooms. So you're like, ah. So full house. Did you do it all in a day?
Pretty much, aye. Yeah. Wow. It wasn't even because we didn't want to do it now, but the people that were buying our house demanded that it be in August.
So you just didn't want it to go for it, like fall through.
Yeah, so we were like genuinely like trying to negotiate with them to at least give me on my day off.
No way.
And then so the entire day off was just me logging boxes and having
one day, 24-hour removal service.
Unbelievable. Genuinely unbelievable.
Could your wife not just do it with the two kids in tow?
Yeah, your dad's at work for an hour.
For an hour, that's the kicker.
There's a brilliant thing, because the guy that runs the movers company, right, they were putting stuff in the van, and he's like proper hard ass on these guys, and the other guys were having a laugh. And then whenever he disappeared, I would like give them cans, and they'd have to drink them before the boss came back, right? And then it was at one point where there was like my wee boy's bed up the stairs. We had really, really thin stairs, and it was going to be a nightmare to get it down. Mm-hmm. And the guy kind of came up to me sheepishly and was like, "We've had an idea. We reckon if two of us go up to the top room and two of us stand at the bottom, we can launch it out the window and we'll catch it on the way down. Would you be all right with that?" And I was like, aye. Like, even if it doesn't work, I want to see this. Like,
aye, let's just get me tripod.
Yeah, put my son on it. Let's see.
And did it work?
Yeah, it totally worked.
No.
Yeah. It was absolute class. Just got it right up, hocked it out, and then these two guys caught it like that at the bottom.
Imagine the people who were moving in going, "Is this what people do around here?" throw bunk beds out.
But no, I wouldn't recommend it.
I think the biggest responsibility I've had while also doing the Fringe was in 2022. I had a Ukrainian move into a house, and that was just strange because I was getting back just to like if I get settled in and everything. Yeah. And I brought her through to the Fringe, and it was when the bin strikes were on, and it was like
Edinburgh felt like home.
Edinburgh looked worse than Kiev. I was like, I'm sorry, we've brought you to this.
She doesn't still live with you, does she?
No, one of her friends was living with another family, and then they got themselves in a position to move in together. Closer into the city. So, they sorted themselves out, but it was just like they just needed somewhere while they got like their national insurance number and got on the grid, basically, is what they needed that 6 months for. So,
very noble of you, Kai.
Well, you know what? Like, I felt like I don't have kids, got a spare room, travelling around with work a lot of the time. It felt like I was like, if I don't do this, I don't know who is.
Aye.
And plus, they were like in a hotel in Paisley, and I couldn't let them live in Paisley for a day longer.
I've had mates, that's the closest I've got, mates who've cheated on the girlfriends and had to move in, and they go, "Can I stay for a weekend?" And they're there for 3 months, and I'm like, "Get out of my house." Just sat in the dark, glugging wine. I'm like, "Get out of my house."
Oh, I found out like how weird I am with my dog when I had a stranger living with us, because like I'll just get pegging. I'll just like be like, "Dog to dog, dog, dog to dog, dog to dog, 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 dog," just shugging around her hands, like hands, her legs moving around, which is fine when you're in the comfort of your own home, you know. Aye. But like then somebody looking at you like it's the most horrific thing they've ever seen, and they've seen their childhood home bombed.
Yeah. Walking in to find you in the bath with the dog one morning.
The dog's washing your hair.
Bit of Celine Dion on.
I had a dog hiccup yesterday because I've got a great dog, love dogs, and I was walking through the meadows and someone was just walking the dog and it just came out wrong and I said, "Can I touch your dog?" She went, "No." I'm like, "Can I stroke your dog?"
Not when you wear it like that.
She came out, "Can I touch your dog?"
It's like one word away from, "Can I touch up your dog?"
"I've got a pleasant spouse, can I touch your dog?"
It's a VIP experience.
This month, Edinburgh is all about laughs. But debt is no laughing matter. 44% of people feel low when dealing with financial issues. The good news is, you're not alone. At UK Debt Expert, we've helped over 250,000 people stand up to their debt worries. They'll review your finances, explain your options, and make a recommendation for your circumstances. With the right support, you could write off or repay your debt and regain control of your finances. So if you're struggling with debt, don't do it alone. Search UK Debt Expert. UK Debt Expert. Authorised and regulated by the FCA. May not be suitable for all. Fees and disadvantages may apply. Free advice at moneyhelper.org.uk.
You've got a decent flat share. You're staying with good people this year.
Well, I've not seen us all at the same time.
Really? Because I often wondered how that happens. Like,
so what, as in how we landed on that?
No, not how that, but like... Because I imagine it would be like a proper laugh every single night, but then you'll all be out at different times,
so
it's not like you're all sitting there like a sitcom at the end of the night.
I forget that as well, just comedians get up so late.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's getting up at like one.
Yeah.
Are you mad? But yeah, I've got a good flat share of people I kind of started out with.
Mm.
So it's like me, Larry Dean, Will Duggan, Rob Mulholland and Lauren Patterson. No one's getting too sucked in by the fringe.
Yeah.
I mean, can they wash a dish? No, they can't. But they're not telling me how many people have had it in the shows.
You're all old enough now to not live like students.
I think so.
I feel like it feels like student crew, but like 10 years later.
I brought an air fryer. I brought a mixer. I brought a Nutribullet. Have I used them? No, but I have brought them.
Peloton.
Yeah, I think Will bought a pack of 26 Menthol as well. I've not seen them in years.
Are any of them proper? Because Mulholland strikes me as a man that doesn't keep a clean house.
I don't think he keeps a clean soul. So I just sort of, I've not seen into the bedroom. That's when you know.
Aye.
So I think no. But like Larry, who I'm good mates with, I've lived with a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Doesn't understand the concept of a sink.
He just washes the dishes in the toilet.
Yeah, pretty much. And he just eats meal deals. That's all he has.
He doesn't cook for himself at all.
Two meal deals a day.
I mean, meal deals are a steal.
But not like two a day.
They are cheaper than the sum of their parts.
Your insides are like a pork pie.
Aye. Yeah. What happens? Because every year of the Fringe, you'll have had... I always wonder what happens if one person's having a really bad one, like a really rough one, or if the one person's having an amazing one. What the kind of power dynamics are. Like,
just make them paranoid as much as you can.
Gets nominated and all this kind of stuff.
I had this in 2016. When I was living with two other pals who were also doing newcomer shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day the nominations were going to come out, we were like, oh, sack this off. And we went up to Arthur's seat. And on the way down, I just got a phone call. I was like, it was my agent. I was like, oh, no. And I answered my phone. And she goes, oh, great news, you've been nominated. And I wanted to, like, jump in the air. And they both just sort of turned to me and I sort of did a slow nod. Oh. And then one of them stormed off and one of them cried.
Oh, no, man. You know what? Nothing makes me feel more sick than comedians crying when they don't get nominated.
Crying.
It's such this Man United like sense of entitlement that you just think that you should be winning stuff all the time. And you're just like, there's other people in the world that are trying their hardest too.
I love that mad person. There's one every year. It's usually a newcomer, and they just go mental the night of the nominations, and they just start telling everyone what they actually think.
Yeah.
And they're like, "They're rubbish. Their dad's a billionaire. They're this." You're like, "Stop."
You know what? I feel like because I had to live for like about five festivals with Daniel Sloss, I just couldn't compare myself to anybody else's fringe. Like, he's been the AICC, in the playhouse. I'm like, all right, good, so I don't have to play the compare yourself game.
Yeah.
That's what I quite like.
The Prince of the Fringe.
You're in the Justin Tonic alleyway.
That's what I quite like about our group of friends, Kai, is that we're all so far away from getting nominated that it's never going to be an issue.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we just come and do what we do.
Every year I point out the joke in The Fringe where I think the people who give out the nominations close their notepad and enjoy the show for what it is. Man, I always like try and just be light relief in a festival full of emotional manipulation for critical acclaim. Yeah. Like, yeah. I just want to make people laugh. That's all I wanted to do, and I'm not going to steer away from that to try and, like push myself up these, like...
Aye. Well, it's also what you do the other 11 months of the year.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's your job.
And everyone's free to do what they want, but, like, when you see, like, a clown that you've never seen on the circuit turn up with one shoe on, and like, when everyone's like, marvellous, six stars, and you go, what are you going to do for the other 11 months of the year?
Do that in Manfords and Leeds.
Yeah. I did me show where I saved a child's life and then got me 5 stars and they're on the poster now, and I'll just play for 4s for the rest of my life.
Is that when you caught the amazing bubble man as he fell out?
it's when I
jumped in the baby like a grenade.
It's handed a flyer to the mum.
It's when Mark's son fell off his bunk bed as he was coming up the top floor of the house.
So who's in your gang then? Like, I like little comedy gangs, not the like the posh ones. Yeah. But do you know when you just go, it's like your year of comedy?
Yeah. So we've got me, Kai.
Milo McCabe,
Sloss.
Barry Castanola.
Oh, he's great.
Elliot Steele.
He's great.
Gareth Waugh.
The white boy gang.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll be on Cowgate looking like the Sharks of the Jets.
Yeah.
Even though our gear one's straight.
Yeah. If you ever see a poster for This Is What Toxic Masculinity Looks Like, it's basically our group. Yeah. I think that's it. Oh, Houghton as well.
Yeah.
We've got Houghton.
The sober crew.
And we used to have like regular ironic trips to Benidorm.
Did you?
Yeah. And I've been to Ibiza, had my stag doing Marbella. It was like just hours, just have them like old school holidays.
Yeah. Proper like 18 to 30s.
Lads holidays. Nuts magazine. Just on the periphery of it.
Nice.
Slossy's Vegas stag do was the one that almost, almost
that.
Broke
us. Insane.
So we'd been running our podcast for like nearly 10 years, right? Mm. And we hadn't done a Patreon, but everything during lockdown started getting monetized. And we're like, I tell you what we should do. We should like do the Patreon. So that one goes out like as a bonus episode and then save up all the money from the Patreon and that can be a stag do fund. And we managed to take 20 lads to Vegas.
Bloody hell.
We made off the Patreon.
I picked the wrong group. I get to go to court for a meal deal. And what did you do in Vegas?
We went to Tournament of Kings.
What's that?
Jousting.
Failed actors joust.
Oh, it's like the wrestling mythology.
But it's horseback stuff.
In the basement of the hotel we were staying in. So we were in the Excalibur Hotel. So it's done like King Arthur's.
Wow. And we were all drinking like mead and having big turkey legs.
There was a bit where they give out like these kind of full rotisserie chickens and no like implements. So you eat them with your hands, right? And then I got given mine and I was like, oh, Matt Kirshen's a vegan. And I didn't mention that there was going to be a vegan at the table and he's about to have a chicken put down in front of him. And I looked over and one of my Geordie mates had his chicken in his hand dancing it in front of my Christian's face like a puppet. I think I should just stop caring. No one else does. I did the helicopter flight over the Grand Canyon. Sick. Was insane. I won a poker tournament. I sat doing a poker tournament the day after Man United beat Newcastle in the Carabao Cup final. Remember watching that with the American fans?
Oh my god!
That is. Have you ever watched football with Americans?
I've been to American football, but not like soccer.
No,
it's
one of the worst. With the things. Fact they call it soccer. Come on, you Red Devils!
Sweeper keeper.
That was it. David De Gea booted the ball out from the box, and just one of them pointed in my face and went, "Sweeper keeper."
Oh, too positive that.
80 minutes in, the checkered flag is coming down on you guys.
Oh my god!
Honestly,
desolate after watching my team get beaten in a final after that. Yeah.
Right? I was desperately trying to buy a gun. At the time.
How
quickly can you get one of these things?
People like that exist. Kill them all. So I think because I'd just been through that, and as well, we stayed up for it because it's 7 a.m. kickoff you're on Nevada time, right? And then went straight to Bally's to do the casino, and I just had no emotion. I was drained of emotion. I was knackered. I didn't even know how I felt about my hand. Mm. So I was just walked through the whole room of
absolute poker face. It's just you sulking.
Just sat down with professionals and just won it. So unlike you as well. It'll be lucky, Kyle.
Remember the music festival we did? Kendall Collin.
Yeah.
Right? And we're in just nose to tail traffic, not moving to get into accreditation, right? And just a car came down the other way, just driving past everybody, clear road, and just stopped at our car. And just wound the window down, going, "Why are you queuing here?" And we're like, "Just to get into the festival." He was like, "Just go and run the back. You can get in, run the other side." And he went, "Follow me." And we just followed him round and got into the festival.
No way.
I was getting marked. I was like, "It's not like me to have this kind of look."
Saved are you like the luckiest person around?
Oh, it's ridiculous, mate.
Matty Reid calls Kai a comedy's thousandth customer.
Like, it's not like, what he texts me. Thousandth customer. That's so good.
It's just the way stuff happens as well. Like, there was, you know, the Punch Drunk gigs that we run live. Yeah. Like, somebody, some hater phoned the fire brigade saying that we're packing the venues too full. So the fire brigade come in, they just check the venue and then increased our capacity by 50.
No way.
So it's just things like that where, like stuff happens and then it just works out well. Like, oh, it always comes up me.
I love that.
And,
I had an experience. I went to Norway about 6 months ago to go and do a gig, and I was the only English person on, and the gig finished at like 8, and I was like, oh, I'm in Oslo for a night, I don't know anyone. So I looked on like the listings, and the 1975 were playing, and I thought, do you know what, I'll just go and see that. Turned up to the box office, closed. I thought, right, I can't lose it. So I went to the security office and I just said, oh, I'm on the guest list. And they went, what's your name? And I said, Brennan Rees. And they looked through the thing and they said, oh, you're not on it. And I said, I am. And he was like, who's your contact? And I just panicked and I said, Denise Welsh from Loose Women, who's what, the mum of Matt Healy. They rung the tour manager 20 minutes later. They walked me through and they went, she's always putting people on the guest list.
Amazing.
Walked straight in. I was literally watching them literally be like, are you having a laugh?
That's class.
I found with being a stand-up, and I'm just sharing this on the public forum now, you could just walk into any comedy gig and say you're one of the acts to the doorman.
Easy.
And you're walking
easily.
Straight past them.
Aye.
I think shows at the Fringe. I just go, I know them.
Yeah.
You go, go on then.
Yeah. Oh, you could easily walk into any gig. Just go, yeah, one of the acts.
One of the
never going to check.
Walk through. It's very rare. Like, in the whole time I've been doing it, it's happened on, like, the odd occasion, but not...
I saw a video just when I was going to trains this morning, the two guys that snuck into a music festival, and it was like, how to sneak into any music festival. And they're just carrying, a big churn of beer.
No way.
Right? And so they've got black aprons on, and they're just going, staff coming through, and then they get to the ticket and, like... mate, we need to get this. We need to deliver this right now. And the guy's like, can I see your credit? And he was like, this is really heavy. He was like, oh, no, on you go. And then they get in and they're like, not only are we in the music festival, we've got about 100 pints of beer in this
that
as well.
Insane.
It's like just absolutely brilliant.
One of my friends says the best way to get in anywhere is have like a Tupperware full of chopped up lemons. Who's questioning that?
That's brilliant.
A ladder. I reckon a ladder would get you in most places.
Yeah. Ladder and a high vis.
I walked into Download Festival. I was playing Download Festival this year, but I walked in and no one asked. I pulled up and said, where's the artist parking? Yeah, over there. And then I literally, because it's by a racetrack.
Donington, yeah.
I was on the starting grid just walking by and they just let me walk through.
Wow.
Not one person asked for a ticket.
Did you? And that's early in the festival as well, isn't it? Because the comedy tent's on before the music starts.
It's like
on
the Wednesday and Thursday.
Because I always find, like, the amount of times where I haven't been able to do the full festival and I've shown up on the Saturday, they really stop caring by Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, they've done that job and it's the golden sight. So
it's like at the Fringe with some of the passes and they've got like UV light on and they're biting it like it's the Olympic medal, holding it up to see if they can see the Queen's face. And then by now they're just like, well, go on. Yeah. The show's bad anyway, go in.
I managed to get, when I used to go to Tea in the Park every year, I used to try and sneak alcohol in every single year, and I would get bolder and bolder as the years went on. And there was one year where I had like a 3-litre bottle of supermarket's own cider. Right, so I'd put it down, it was a hot day, and I'd put it down the back of these kind of combat shorts. So I'm kind of waddling in like that with this big massive bulge at the back, and there's a guy getting in the ticket queue.
Oh, it's like John McGinn.
Yeah. And he's like that, there's no chance you're ever getting in there. And I was like, well, I'm going to give it a go. And he was like, I'll give you a hand. So he went in the queue next to me, just ahead of me, and then pretended to have a heart attack. So everyone ran over and held him, and I just waddled through.
He just spent the next 3 hours in the medical tent.
Ultimate legend.
One year at Glastonbury, I put all my vodka in water bottles and just had them in the motorhome. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Maxwell got out of bed in the motorhome and got up, and I just watched it like a car crash in slow motion.
Oh, no,
she just had like three gulps of vodka and like my morning breath. Oh. And I was so sad for him. Oh. He took it quite well, actually. He just went.
My mum went to a music festival and she managed to get two bottles of wine in by hollowing out a baguette. Took a baguette in. Just hollowed out a baguette and put two bottles of wine in.
Just in the middle of the main stage, just drinking out of a baguette.
Also, whenever we go to a party, like a family do, if it's in like a work events club or whatever, she wraps up a box of wine to look like a present, puts a tag on and everything, and she plonks it on the table and just uses the nozzle.
Oh, that is absolute class. Your mum sounds brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, raging alcoholic, but she's a good laugh.
Is your parents coming up with the Fringe?
Right, so my mum's been up, planned it and all that. My dad messaged me about an hour ago saying, I'm on my way. Can I stay at yours for the next few days? I'm like, no, you can't. You can stay for a night. But he's just... My dad loves coming to the Fringe, but whenever I say pick something, he'll either pick something that's got too many puns in it or a clown show where someone gets the kit off. And he'll really, like, even if he's in a different row, he'll be like trying to look. And you're like, you're not looking at art
proper
there.
Northern dad.
Have you ever done stuff with your parents in your show and then they've come to see it and you're wondering how it's going to go down?
Every year. Every year.
I did one where I'd done a rant about my mum and then she had an epiphany and went, I'm probably only doing this from your own mental illness. And I thought I'd soften it when she was in, and then I went, I'm only doing this from your own OCD. That was me softening it. And she marched backstage and went, do you think I've got an OCD? I think, well, I did change the words for you.
Yeah, I've actually softened it a bit.
My mum and dad came and see me last night, actually.
Oh, nice. Is that a good show?
Yeah. No.
it's always that one. My mum saw the worst show of the Fringe.
Yeah, they must look so disappointed. They must be just like, well, honestly, God.
She didn't even put money in the bucket.
Did she? I had an alright one when my dad came up this year. He saw a decent version of it, I think. But it does add a little bit of pressure on you, though, because you do want to, like, validate what you're doing, totally. You know.
It's worse when Amy comes, my wife. That's a lot worse. Comes to, oh, God, I'm proper nervous for that one. Yeah. Just because you're like, this is going to be so unattractive abysmally bad here.
it is. Bombing's unattractive.
Yeah.
What about when...
No one goes, oh, look, I'm sweating up there. Oh, checking the notes, check them again.
Grabbing the mic stand.
I can't wait to jump his bones. what about when your son's there? Do you get nervous when your son's
Jesus,
there?
I talk about that in the show this year.
Brennan, you should have seen him. He didn't know his son was in.
Oh, no.
It was at altitude.
Oh, no.
And it's like, there's like a balcony where like the acts and families and stuff hang out. And as far as he was concerned, his wife had took his children to bed. But Leslie Sloss, Daniel's mum, convinced them it was time for them to see their dad doing stand-up. And they came in and watched him do a bit about his favourite child being his daughter.
Oh, no.
He was gutted, genuinely devastated. Like,
and then he lied to his son afterwards, saying, "I change it every set. Tomorrow it'll be you're my favourite child." And I was
he didn't buy it at all.
No. I was telling.
Is that why you got to go to the the Euros?
Oh, yeah, you had to take him on the Euros to make up for it.
The most expensive apology.
So I was telling Katie Askins, whose dad is Andy Askins, comedian, and I was telling her about what you'd said to soften the blow to Seamus, and she just let it sink in because she'd had that before of her dad. As her dad had went, oh, yeah, sometimes it's you, sometimes it's Amy. As an adult woman just went, no.
Destroying an entire child.
Your trauma had a knock-on effect. Almost everyone at the festival, Mark.
Oh, my God. My wee boy was on... He was on your podcast as well.
Oh, that was so good.
That was funny.
He was so natural.
Yeah.
He is just
That was the most bizarre podcast, I think, ever.
His son come on, and ex-Newcastle United manager Alan Pardew...
What?
...came on the podcast.
What?
He was just having a ski holiday, legs comedy. Came to the podcast... And then him and Mark Nelson came on and sat on an oversized chair, like What did your son say to you? Right, the massive chair, right? Like a cartoon big
chair.
Like one at the Leprechaun Museum in Dublin, right? And then his son just come up and went, do you reckon your arse will fit in that? But I sat in the chair.
Joey did this morning, right? So Amy was telling me this. So I'd bought them new toothbrushes for the new school year, right? So Amy hadn't seen them yet. So she's brushing Seamus's teeth this morning. And she's like, oh, I've never seen this toothbrush. Who brought you this toothbrush? And he's got a mouthful of toothpaste. So he starts doing this, doing a massive belly, right? And she goes, what? And Amy's sister's pregnant. She's gone, what, your auntie Katie? She bought you? And he was like, no. And then eventually went, Dad. And I was like, that was his mind for me, this massive pregnant belly.
He's totally got it in for you, like. Jesus. No wonder you've got a favourite child.
No.
And now time for a note from our sponsor. So we all know that The Fringe is all about the laughs, but debt is no laughing matter. One in three of us have sleepless nights worrying about money. But the good news is that you're not alone. When you're dealing with debt you can't afford, talk to UK debt expert.
Will we play the wheel game? Right. So we have got a spinning wheel of questions, gentlemen. And each one, each number corresponds to a question. So
where do these questions come from?
I don't know.
Who's
these questions?
The producers.
Right, Kai, you want to go first? Number 10.
That looks like a number 10.
This is pretty good, actually. If you could pick any song to be the soundtrack of your Fringe experience, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good question, but it's the one that kind of requires thought. You don't want to knee-jerk that one. So what would be a good song that, like,
I don't think this has
a massive gear change? What about, like, what about Mr. Blue Sky, where, like, you know how it's just, like, belt a song and then there's just the bit at the end where you go, what's this bit? What's this weird couple of minutes after? So I've got Mr. Blue Sky when I'm at the Fringe and living up the party, and then just this odd, like, after thing where I'm just back and forward on the train to Glasgow.
That's a Sunday train home once after the last gig.
So yeah, I think there's a song with a pure gear change in it, Mr. Blue Sky.
There's not many songs that do the opposite. Like, most of them do a gear change up.
Uh-huh.
Right, it's like a big drop, and everyone's like, whereas that one is making sure everyone gets home. Okay.
I actually think it's a war crime that they did that. It's like such a. I had it one time.
I think war crime's a bit strong there.
No, Geneva Convention. Get a hello to the Geneva Convention. It's because, you know, anything that does that and you put it on a playlist because you like it, and then, like, you've got your audience coming in, and then it just goes like that, and you're just like, now we've just got like a minute and a half of weirdness.
Yeah.
I have the same with, like, do you know where a bit of a song ruins the song for you?
Uh-huh.
And it's the Fleetwood Mac song where it goes into down, 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 down.
I hate that bit.
Because
it's a Formula One tune, or just in general?
And there's covering a Formula One tune.
It does. I suppose, I know, because it is a class song up until that point, and then it just completely.
It's just a different song.
Yeah, it is a different song. Yeah,
I'm not going to be able to repeat what's said in the song because I just don't think it's appropriate for the podcast, right? But I had Hasadiga Ibawai on from Book of Mormon.
It's one
of my walk-ins. But then Hasadiga, because it's really upbeat. But it's like, But then the tone of it is bleak.
Yeah, if you think of the lyrics,
But there's a bit where the
just
song.
Lots of guys in Newcastle tops. Sitting there singing along.
The song stops, and then in the musical, the guy goes, and then there's people that haven't been in the room when the song's on, but they just walk in the door as that breakaway bit comes on, and I'm just backstage going, what have I done? Putting this on.
Every day forgetting until it gets to that bit, you go,
and then not even.
Hasadiba Evo I.
Oh, brilliant. Right, Brennan. Number 6. Oh, if you could never ever do comedy again, what would you do?
Well, I thought about this about halfway through the freaking. I'd like to. Like move to like a foreign country and just learn how to like bake or something, or like is that one of the worst answers you've ever
heard? Work in a boulangerie.
And just be like, so no one's going, are you? Not that people do it that often, but occasionally like someone will go, are you? And I go, oh god, I'm just trying to
bake.
What are you doing in my house?
Can you already bake?
I can bake a bit, but I'd love to be able to. I love doing that, or I love watching. It's like the things that I seem to watch on TikTok, like cleaning videos. Baking videos, riots. They're my freedom.
So when they looted Greg's, that was just perfection.
Oh, honest to God, the cleanup after. I was like, oh. Bacon.
I could see you on Celebrity Bake Off.
I could see me on Normal Bake Off. Yeah, I think that. What would you? Well, I guess you had a job before it, but you won't go back to Scottish Power, would you?
No, God, no. I don't know what I'd do actually.
Nah, you know what? Mine's gonna have to change because my like I always like you know.
Just making more noise for this audio thing.
I got into snowboarding pretty late, really, like in mid 20s. Uh-huh. But like, but when I picked it up, I was like, oh, I'd love to throw myself at this. I'd love to do a season, even though like the thought of doing a season's past because I've got a house now, you know.
Yeah.
So and I'd always thought I'd love to be a snowboard instructor and get to that level, but like now I'm in my 40s, I don't think that's a like I need to rethink my alternative career path.
Do you know what I'd really like to do?
What?
Do you know those guys that build furniture for display in IKEA?
Put in a lack shelf together
all day, just putting together furniture in IKEA.
Would your family stand over you, like, making instructions and nagging at you and suggesting things like what normally happens when you're building IKEA furniture?
I'd get a row for getting it wrong, but that'd be so satisfying.
Just put in the... Because you'd also know exactly how it works. Get some headphones in, you just use the little Allen key.
Oh, God, yeah. It's like a bit like adult Lego.
It is, isn't it?
That's just called Lego.
I know, it's just...
I brought Lego to the fridge.
What did you bring?
An Infinity Gauntlet fist. Yeah. And the great thing is, once you make it, it becomes a different toy.
Yeah. Some night at the end for Larry, that's going to be...
Where's that piece going? Where's the Infinity Stone?
I bought the Lego released a Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
The Orca. They've released that, so I've bought it for the end of the Fringe. It's going to be a wee Fringe treat to
buy. I get Lego every year for Christmas and I just forget to make it.
Yeah.
So I just gathered some that I was just like, this will be fine. Have I touched it? No, but...
Yeah. I hate when people buy the kids Lego. Because it's not for a kid. It's not now. There's too many tiny wee bits now.
So they need to be a little bit older to have the concentration spans of doing Lego. Otherwise, it just ends up all over the house.
Aye, they're going to lose stuff. Like they got one that was like an ice cream truck, but there's like tiny wee ice cream scoops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. That's lost within the hour, and then they get upset, and I'm like, well,
one of my pals who's from Glasgow, his job is he buys bulk things of Lego, sorts through it and makes it into the sets, and he earns a fortune.
Wow.
But his house looks like a drug dealer's house because there's little bags of Lego everywhere. They're just like you just go into a room and it's just, it's the good stuff. It's not Duplo, it is.
Right, well, I do one. 14. Oh, okay. That's a good one for all of us, actually. Who's the one comedian who you've never seen that you'd love to, past or present?
Oh, Billy Connolly. I wish I'd seen Billy Connolly live.
And he's prime, like proper 80s.
Aye. Yeah, like in his pomp, yeah.
Yeah.
Because like that was one that like it was just a household VHS and like all my family, like my auntie and my dad and all that, like they always had Billy Connolly on, so like that's my introduction to comedy really. And just the fact that I've spent most of my career up in Scotland and I never did get to see him live, I feel like I really missed out on something.
I've seen him twice, and the first time was like so excited, I was so new to comedy and he was great, and the second time he was like, and he'll always be amazing, but he was just a little bit not there, which was like really hard to watch because it was in an arena. He had his set list all over the place, and you know, I don't know how old he was at the time, but he's getting on now, and it just felt like, do you know when a football player does the extra season, and you go,
like Ronaldo at the Euros, essentially,
exactly that.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to his audiobook because I would have probably normally read it, but because he read it out, I felt like that might be like his last thing that you hear from him.
His last performance.
His last performance. Yeah. So I listened to his audiobook.
Connolly's a good one, Brennan.
It's just because I've seen quite a lot of comedians, but I'd love to just have seen like Peter Kay in a comedy club.
Yeah.
Because I just hear that.
Like Frog and Bucket.
I'd love to see what he was doing because supposedly he'd go off and people would be like, we want him back.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see him absolutely roof it.
Blowing the roof off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
like all smoke in the air as well, when people smoking indoors, yeah, like that old school, like 80s, 90s, the comedy club vibe. I saw McIntyre at a comedy club one time. Yeah. I saw Lee Evans at a comedy club as well. That was insane. I just really, like, it's really interesting seeing those arena comics in a club environment, and they're always figuring out material when they do it, but like, it's always class.
Yeah.
And you can tell why they've got to where they were, because a comedy club was too small for them.
Aye.
Who'd be yours?
I think I'd go mid-80s Eddie Murphy.
Ooh, like raw
delirious Eddie Murphy. Yeah,
that's
I'd
the first stand-up
that.
I ever saw.
Yeah. I mean, it's aged, but it's still phenomenal.
Early Chris Rock would be good as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Aye, that first initiation of Chris Rock, that would be unbelievable. Right, well, this has been class, boys. Yeah, great fun. Let's do the traditional plug of the shows. Kai?
Yes, I am on at 7:15 at the Subatomic, which is a Just a Tonic venue in the church on Pleasance Courtyard Road. And the show's called Gallivanting. And when I'm here, can I plug my wife's dog park?
Yeah, gotcha.
My wife's got a soft play for dogs at East Kilbride. It's the best place in the world. Just somewhere indoors, you know, like sometimes dogs can't get off the lead, the recall isn't great, like the owner might not be able to keep up with the energy of that dog, or sometimes he may just want to get out the rain. So she just created a nice, clean, safe environment for dogs to play.
That's so
ball
good.
Pits, sand pits, agility bars. It's called the Dug and Bone.
That's great.
It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And also, Kai's, your poster is phenomenal.
Isn't it class?
Like,
I was so happy
proper
with that.
Good.
It's really good.
You know when you give your artist like a little brief of what the show's going to be about, and then they just send back a one-shot, one-kill version of the poster, and you're just like, I mean, I couldn't.
Yeah, it's
so good.
I'm very, very happy with
phenomenal.
That.
Phenomenal. Brennan, where are you at?
So I'm doing 3:45 every day at the Liquid Rooms on the Free Fringe, so it's free. My show's called Me, Me, Me. And go to his wife's dog park.
Amazing.
And I'm on, it's 7:05 every night at The Hive. It's called, what's it called again?
You're very professional.
God, I can't even remember my own show.
I've genuinely forgotten my own show. The Fringe where I'm brain is so fried you forgot the name of your show.
What is it
I'm
called?
I'm so glad I'm here for this moment.
Okay, go.
Jesus, what is it your show's called?
Bloody hell, that's terrible. Mark Nelson.
It's what the Scotsman said.
Oh, Getting Better Man. That's it. That's it. Yeah. Thank God.
Wow. Dementia Live.
Yeah, when was the first sign you noticed Mark was deteriorating? You are in the middle of moving house.
I can't even use that as an excuse anymore. Right, this has been class, boys. Thank you very much indeed for this. Thank you to Force One for having us for the Fringe Takeover. And go and see the boys' shows, and go and see as many shows as you possibly can, and have a wonderful, wonderful Fringe. Cheers.